Coach Maxwell telling me this week, we hopefully can compete with Beloit this year because they dominated us a year ago at their house. Here's Boudreaux. Hello, goodbye, kapow. Brecken Boudreaux, like she's sprung off a trampoline, delivers the kill.
Beloit volleyball team in action last night. You could have heard on the live video stream, ncksports.com, by the Beloit Trojan channel, as the Beloit Lady Trojans now 5-2 on the season, as they win in straight sets over Ellsworth yesterday, and then winning in straight sets over Ellenwood. Some of those highlights posted, Katie Country 94 Facebook page. Also follow me on Twitter, ncksradioguy10. So a good night for the Beloit volleyball team. We'll find out if it's a good night for the Beloit football team tonight, as it is homecoming. Homecoming, I am learning a little bit about homecoming. As my son,
so am
I. Yeah, right. Dusty's like, did your son have to be a candidate? Because I had to get up early on a game day on a Friday. I really didn't want you to, but there's a whole set of things going on during homecoming that I was not aware of. And it started like as soon as the candidates were announced. It started right away. And it's a lot of fanfares, a lot going on. And it's interesting. Hey, got a great breakfast today. Yeah. I don't usually eat breakfast, so that was nice. Enjoyed that. Thank everybody for putting together the breakfast. That was cool. I know from my experiences talking with other dads, talking with football coaches and basketball coaches, because sometimes you have a homecoming during basketball season or barn warmer or whatever you want to call it. It's called barn warmer in my day. Homecoming during the fall, and then winter it was the barn warmer or snowball, king and queen or whatever. I came to this conclusion as I left the breakfast today so I could get over here and prep for the show. So if people thought I was being rude by walking out without helping clean up, I had a job that I needed to get to. Okay, I already put aside a few hours today, and Dusty was nice enough to come in and do the early show today on Waterside Wake Up. But here's what the conclusion I came to. It's cool and all right? Breakfast, and then they took a whole bunch of pictures, and then we're going to do the parade, and I get a ride in a convertible. I don't even want to drive it. Some people may say, well, you don't want to drive a convertible? I'm okay with just taking it all in, you know, relaxing a little bit until doing the game on the radio tonight after doing volleyball last night and then football tonight. And it is a long week of festivities, and my wife is more involved than I am with it because she works at the school as well. And so that's awesome. But I came to this conclusion, and I think it's been there all along, but it really came to me today at the breakfast. It just all hit me, and I was driving back from the breakfast to get over here to prepare for the show, that if you polled every dad that has a high school kid, okay, every dad, and if you polled every single coach of any sport, or maybe a male coach, all right, I think the vote would go 99% to 1% in favor of, well, football coaches would be okay with just kicking homecoming to the curb. I know this. They've told us that.
Yeah.
Okay. But I'm not Debbie Downer on homecoming at all. My point to the story is this. I think if you polled all the men, basically, and you said, hey, what if we changed homecoming to where it was just five queen candidates? It's just the girls, the gals, and you could pull all the current high school boy students as well. And I think the vote from the male perspective of current high school students, and then you go to the coaches, and you would go to the dads, I think it would be overwhelmingly like, that's cool. They just want to have candidates, and they're all girls. That's fine. And the girls can do all of the stuff, and that is fine, and that is awesome, and that is great. And if you're a dad of a daughter, you're like, that's cool. That's awesome. I'll be there when I'm supposed to be there, so forth and so on. But I think if you pulled the actual male students, and if you polled the coaches and you polled the dads, we would all get together. You know, honestly, we would all get together at the local bar or establishment, as long as we're of age, and go ahead and then show up for the event. And that would be awesome. And we would cheer and we would support it. But we would be okay with it just being an all. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I don't think there's a lot of guys out there that would call right now and disagree with me that, you know. Go ahead. You talk to other guys that have been married. I'm married, right? And I've talked this story for a few people the last few days. They're like, dude, the wedding is way bigger for the woman than it is for the man. It just usually is. Mm. Not always, but usually. And I think it's the same thing, obviously, with any kind of homecoming, any kind of snowball, barn warming, whatever you want to call it. All of those things are way more important to the girls than it is to the guys. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's absolutely fine. Just like guys tend to care more about, all right, a particular sporting event or something that is guy-like, and the gals are like, I could care less. All I need to know is who won. I don't need to watch 3 hours of football and have them watch replays for 30 minutes during the last 2 minutes of the game. And by the way, the gals can say, why does the last 2 minutes of a football game take half an hour? Why do you like watching this for so long all the time? So we all have our intricacies. We all have the things that we like, whether it's just individually, whether we're a man and a woman, a girl or a boy, or whatever the case may be, husband and a wife, we all have these things. And there are certain things more important to the ladies, and there are certain things more important to the guys. Without question, these type of events, prom would be another one. I believe prom was invented by somebody that wanted to make a financial killing and came up with a terrific idea that helps those. I mean, can you imagine some businesses without prom if there was no prom? Mm-hmm. I mean, and once again, I can tell you from experience, prom, I was just like, tell me what time, when I need to be there. And I skipped my junior or my senior year prom because I went to junior year. I'm like, yay, whoop-de-doo. And then I went to a basketball star game. I was like, basketball or prom? This is easy. I'm going to go play basketball. Mm-hmm. And then I did the after prom, which was way better. After prom was awesome. But for the girls and the gals in my class, it was all about prom. And once again, there's nothing wrong with that. It's just that the guys are like, you know, if I got to go, I'll be there. I'll smile. I won't be a jerk about it. But at the same time, I'm looking forward to what happens after prom in regards to just hanging out with the fellas or doing this or doing that or after prom games and stuff, whereas all the pomp and circumstance, and I think that's what we're really talking about here. There's the pomp and circumstance to weddings. There's pomp and circumstance to all kinds of various things. There, you know, even birthday parties, bar mitzvahs, or whatever else it might be. There's a lot to it, and some people don't see all of that that goes into it. And I'm learning some of that this week with the homecoming stuff, and it's interesting. I always like to learn new things, and I'm learning new things during this process. And I'm also learning that a suit can cost money, and other things too. And I've told my son, I said, listen, all right, that was higher than we anticipated. Okay, fine. Now maybe you can wear that for job interviews or, you know, something when you're in college. He goes, no, Dad, I'm going to get ripped. And, well, that's fine. You shove that suit on you and you can be Chris Farley and Tommy Boy and fat guy in a little coat and you can, and it can snap. And, but you're going to shove your body into that suit for what I paid for it. Okay. So, and I was walking out, a couple of the guys were like talking about this breakfast. And the day just started, by the way, for the homecoming people. It just started today for the boys and girls candidates. It just started. They had the breakfast. There's a whole bunch of stuff yet today. They still have to go to school, focus on academics, and then there's the parade, and then there's the whole crowning tonight at 7:30, and then, of course, there's a football game at 8, then a dance after that. And there's already a couple of the guys like, oh, my feet are killing me in these shoes. I'm like, ha! Well, you got a long way to go there, buddies. Yep. Yeah, if you think it's killing you now. And then I was like, oh, yeah, hey, and the smiles have just started. The pictures have just begun. So there's a lot to it, and it is very interesting. And I think God knew that I couldn't handle a daughter. And this is one of those situations where God's pulling a little prank on me to where my son's a homecoming candidate going, yeah, you don't have girls, but you're going to go through this. And it's not a bad thing. Once again, it's just something that I was not prepared for. And so I'm learning as a dad, and there's a lot that goes into it. I thank all the people that put in a lot of extra time and effort to do these things. If I were in charge, I wouldn't do half of it. But I'm a fuddy-duddy, all right? I'm a party pooper. I'm a Debbie Downer from that standpoint because I'm one of those that likes to cut to the chase and get to what we need to get and get done. It's kind of like guys going into going shopping. I was talking with one of the dads about that today at breakfast. Guys go into a store, and within 13 seconds is the story that was shared with me, which is pretty impressive. In 13 seconds, a guy can go in, and he can find exactly what he needs, and he's already at the checkout aisle. A woman goes in the store, and 13 hours later, still not sure exactly what she wants. Like, is that a good deal or not? Now, that is a bit of an exaggeration. but it is the difference between men and women in generalities when it comes to those things. There's no doubt when I go into the store, I'm not in the store as long, usually. Now, there are times where I might be different than some of the guys. I may take a little bit more time to kind of look around. Usually it's when I have some time and I'm killing time anyway.
Yeah.
But if I'm in a hurry, I go get what I need and I'm out of there, man. Yeah. I'm out of there. So we're all wired a little bit differently. And you see even more of that as you go through some of these processes with the homecoming stuff. And I've told my son, you know, hey, it's cool. You know, at the same time, you know, should every student in the student population have a chance to experience this stuff? Some people may say yes. Other people would say, thank your stars you weren't having to go through all this. It just depends on how you look at it.
Yeah, there's a lot of things like that. Like I can't relate to the homecoming thing. I wasn't a homecoming candidate. I don't know anything about it. I know coaches don't like it. That's the extent of what I know about homecoming, right? Like I don't dive into it. You know, I've actually helped some people with some stuff like during their spirit week for homecoming, but as far as the actual day of and being a candidate and knowing what they go through and what they do, this stuff that you're telling me about is all brand new to me too. Like mm-hmm. I've never heard it. I'm like, this seems like a lot of stuff for just a one night deal that's going to be over like 3-4 minutes at the actual event, right? Like when they do the homecoming crowning in 5-10, I don't know how long it takes, but it probably takes about,
if I remember right, about 10 minutes. By the time you announce them, they come through, they get on the platform stage or whatever, they crown the king and the queen. And they announced last year's king and queen, which I'm going to go out on a... Well, I don't remember who last year's king and queen was. If it was Grady Seifert, he ain't going to be there. Because KU's playing football
tonight. A little busy
tonight,
right?
Yeah, I don't know. It might not have been. I don't even remember. I announced on the radio who the king and queen candidates are. That's cool. I'll mention MCs. I'll mention everything I need to mention and everything else. And then you have it, and it's cool. You know, a lot of family members come to visit, and we've got grandparents that are going to be there for the event, so that's pretty cool. And it's pretty neat for a lot of people. And then there's others who are just like, can we just get on with it and get to the game? And just, you know, and that's true of anything, you know, anything in life. I mean, can we just move? Okay, yay, the Chiefs have 3 different people talking about winning a Super Bowl. Can we get to let's just go ahead and play the game? All right, that was last year. Yay, we won it all. We get it. Let's move on.
Yeah.
That type of thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Seemed like when I was in school, like, if it was either homecoming or if it was snowball in the winter or if it was spring fling is what we call barn warmer in the spring, right? Like, so spring fling is what we call that. If it's like you had to be participating in that season's sport to be one of the candidates, mm-hmm. right? Like, so I had to be a football player or I had to be playing basketball in the winter for mm-hmm. snowball to be a candidate. And so, you know, basketball didn't go the way I wanted it to my senior year, so I was never up for any kind of anything like that because that's why I've never really experienced any of that stuff. I think mm-hmm. my sister was the spring fling queen when she was a senior, Krista, but otherwise I think she was the only one in our family that was even up. Brad might have been for snowball. I don't even remember who all they were, but you had to be playing the sport, so I didn't play football, you know, deep into high school, and so I was never a candidate, never even dreamed of being a candidate for homecoming. So it's just like I voted for who I wanted to win, and that was my extent of homecoming, and that's what it's been my whole life. And prom was a little different for me. Like, you're talking about all these things that guys feel different. You know, first year I went by myself, so junior year prom was just like, I'll just be there whenever I need to get there. I did have a date. People might not believe that my senior year, but mm-hmm. I actually
need,
did one of the
pictures.
Few one of the few
proof.
Dates that I actually had in high school. And so I was kind of excited for that, you know, it was something different for me. Project prom was always fun and things like that, and maybe more fun than the actual prom. But I did have fun at my senior year prom. But all those things are going to be different with each person that takes part in it. And, you know, I think I don't think you're wrong about polling the guys about how they would rather do homecoming.
Right. Well, and see, the other thing that's so funny, I just read a text, and this was actually, I kid you not, I was about to talk about this, is that prom is all-inclusive. Like, anybody can go to prom.
Exactly.
All right? Now, there might be people that don't go to prom, or maybe they're embarrassed that they can't afford to get a tux or a dress or whatever, but you're all invited to prom. And you're all invited to the homecoming dance after the game, okay? All the students. But in regards to be the queen or king candidates, there's only 5 selected on both sides. At least at Beloit, that's how it is.
Yeah.
Well, it's a popularity contest, okay? And that is part of it I don't like. Because,
for sure.
Because we already do this already with our elections in our country. It becomes a popularity contest, or, you know, it's not necessarily... Do people really study and listen to the candidates and what their voice and reason is on issues and what their plans are to fix the country? No, you just basically pick the person you like more or hate the least, you know? And so when it comes to the homecoming thing and some of these other events that the schools have... It, from what I understand, all four classes vote, and then you get the top five, I guess, vote getters for the girls and boys side. And if I'm wrong on this, somebody can correct me. And then, I think it's the upper classes, the juniors and seniors, they vote to come up with the five candidates, if I was told this correctly. But then there's another vote when everybody gets the vote in the high school. I believe it's just the high school, so freshman through senior. So then everybody votes. And people have joked that if one of the candidates is from band, huge advantage. Because if they like in the band and you're the only one of the candidates from the band's got a lot of voting power, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there's been a joke about that before. And then there are people like, and I've already heard it, well, we're just waiting for a certain person's name to be announced tonight because we know who it's going to be. It's going to be he or she. We know who's going to win. Sometimes you might be surprised. It goes differently. And so I had somebody just text and said, you know, it's a popularity contest. What's the value in a popularity contest? I understand the homecoming part. Welcome your alums home for homecoming.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Homecoming. Hey, alums, welcome back. You know, kind of like Memorial Day weekend. Welcome back, or reunions. You know, homecoming, you know, football, whatever it is, or basketball, whatever you have your homecoming. Alums, come back and watch the game. Support your former school, this, and that. And I think that's an interesting point that I thought of, and this text reaffirmed what I was already thinking. I've talked with some administrators about this even before over the years, and that is, you know, we have, and we've talked about this on the show before, we have an athlete of the week, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, sometimes there's a student of the week or a student of the month, but, you know, should we be doing more stuff overall, just in general society, to note not just athletes and entertainers, but other people that are doing great things, you know? Like, when an entertainer or an athlete does something and they get in trouble with the law or they do something amazing, it's top flight news information, even overlaps from sports entertainment into your regular news stream. But then somebody goes, you know, is a world-renowned scientist or inventor or wins the Nobel Peace Prize, and that's on the back page of the newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, wait a minute, it's kind of messed up, isn't it? Isn't that something that we should acknowledge and pinpoint? So my thought is with the all these things where people are picked by popularity or votes or whatever the case may be, is that how about if you had a system? And I know it makes it more complicated, don't get me wrong, but if you had a system, and we got smart people in our educational systems, if you had a system that, you know, a point system for every A you get, every B you get, a point system for, you can tie in athletics, you absolutely can, that you have a point system for extracurricular activities you're involved with, whether it's band, dance, cheerleading, softball, baseball, cross country, football, it don't matter. And you put it all in one big pile, right? And you assign points for people that participate in things. You know, if you don't participate in anything, that's going to hurt you in regards to being up for homecoming. And maybe you don't care.
Hmm.
Maybe people do care. You know, some people care about their GPA and getting on an honor roll. Other people don't. Same thing here. You come up with some kind of system because you got a system with a grade point average, obviously. You have a system you come up with. And the only problem is, like here with Beloit, it's the first week of football season. So thus, it's hard to do so early in the year when you just started school. But it could be accrual is what I'm talking about. The only people are up for the homecoming are seniors. So it's an accrual pattern. And the other thing that would hurt you is if somebody moved into school, they would have no chance of being a homecoming king or queen. Whereas right now, if somebody moved 6 months ago into there and they're very popular, great person, they would have a chance. So there's pros and cons to everything, but I would like to see the system be a little bit more divvied up to where popularity is just the boat is just a piece of the pie, and maybe a small piece of the pie, and there's other things that are thrown into it. I'm not trying to reinvent the wheel. I'm not bitching and complaining and moaning. I don't lose any sleep over it, to be honest with you. I don't. But just going through this whole thing, and yes, my kid's one of the candidates, and I'm not sitting here saying he should or shouldn't be. It's just that I do think about those that aren't. And I think, and it applies in other situations. You can sit here and go, well, you have these bigger cities that have your teams, and only so many kids can be on these select teams, and some kids get cut, and some kids get to try out, and you feel bad you can't include everybody. And, you know, when you get in real life, you can't include everybody. There's a job opening, and 12 people apply. You can't give everybody the job. Yeah. It is a competitive nature type of thing in society. But just some thoughts that crossed my mind in regards to, all right, popularity is a little bit of it. Okay, that's cool. But maybe there should be some other aspects. And maybe I'm missing something. Maybe I'm not being informed. And maybe there's a lot more to it in regards to how everything is decided. But based on a couple of people I know, they've told me, or I've read that, heard, or through other people that I know, saying, you know, this is how it goes. This is how, and I, that's how it was when I was in school. It was, you voted. It was as simple as that. Mm-hmm. It was keep it simple, stupid. You voted, and you, hey, top four people or top five people, vote getters, boom, there you are. You're candidates, and you go from there. So anyway, it's just been an eye-opening experience. I'm sure it's probably more so for my wife. She's been way more involved than I have. And so I'll be involved a little bit more today, get a ride in a convertible. And if they give me candy to chuck, I don't want to drive. I just want to chuck candy and release some stress. So if you want candy and you see me in that convertible, you better put your helmet on because I'm firing. I'm kidding. Nobody's dumb enough to give me candy to throw at people. No way.
No, not at all.
Just give it to the driver. I'll just kick back, relax, take a nap, whatever the case may be, and get ready for the game tonight. So anyway, homecoming, and it is weird to have it in week one, but that's just the way the schedule falls. And every school will have some sort of homecoming, or, you know, in fall and then winter and so forth and so on. And I think when you're older, you become more fudgety about it. Like, you think you'd be more of a party pooper. Maybe that's how me and this other person just texted. Maybe we're just a little bit overanalyze it too much. And some people that would hear us talk about this may say, dude, it's no big deal. You know, let them have their fun. And maybe you're right. Maybe you're right. And I'm not saying they shouldn't have fun. I'm just wondering, yeah, is there a way to come up with a system to where it puts together a whole bunch of different things into the formula, is what I'm asking.
Sure. And
or, as I said with the dads, if they were in charge, and coaches, just make it a queen candidate, and we crown a queen. We need no king, and we just move on.
Yeah, yeah. I will say this. I understand the whole point of the popularity contest thing, right? Like, I get it. Mm-hmm. I understand it. But one of the, like, I wasn't, like, overly excited just about who's going to be king or queen, but one of the things I actually did love about homecoming was homecoming week and spirit week, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you got to dress up during the week.
Different
you
days.
Do something different that you don't normally do.
And that involves
school.
Everybody and if they want to be involved.
If you want to, you have the option to be involved in homecoming. Coming as much as you want. If you're not a candidate, those are the options that you have to make this right. week fun for you, right? Bet. Like, and I always loved it, right? Yeah. Like, I even from freshman year all the way through senior year, I just, if I had a costume or something that I could do, or I'd get recommendations from my mom and dad, or my siblings, the three of them that have been through it all before, like, hey, you do dress up like this, wear this for this day for mm-hmm. Spirit Week. And I'll never forget, like, my senior year, like I said, I didn't play football, but the Friday of homecoming is purple and gold day, right, mm-hmm. at Trigo. Right. And so I went to school the entire day with my face painted half gold and half purple with a T right down the middle of it, right? And so I'll never forget that. It was a fun day. I didn't ever go to school with my face painted any other day right. in my life, right? Yeah. And so and people respected it, and they thought it was kind of cool that I did it. And it's like I always had school pride and things like that. And so I think if you can take that kind of mentality as a student,
sure.
if you can take that mentality into it, try to offset the popularity contest part right. of it and mm-hmm. and just enjoy the week. That's what I did in high school. I was nowhere near what anybody would call popular in high school. I was there.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Like, I went to class, got my grades,
there.
Did all my work.
Got
I was there.
That.
Nobody cared if I was there or not.
Right.
I was there.
Right. Right.
And so that's just the way our class was. And we weren't, you know, maybe as close-knit as some other classes, but we just got through it, right? But mm-hmm. I just always remember, like, enjoying homecoming week and spirit week and being a part of that and being a part of a community and being part of your school and having pride in what your school is. And I think that's a good way to offset the popularity mm-hmm. contest.
I agree with that. I think that's a great point. I have had somebody tell me that you know, how about this? Why don't you just have everything you do? You have Spirit Week. You have your things every single day. That includes your whole student body and your administrators, your teachers, your staff. And you can still have the parade. And, you know, because Bullitt's had all kinds of parades lately. And you can have a parade and you can involve the whole student body. Mm-hmm. Or it doesn't have to just be, you know, certain candidates or whatever. And then you don't have anything right before the football game. You don't have a king or queen court. You don't have a crowning of a king or a queen. You just simply have Spirit Week, and it leads all, and then have the big pep rally, you know, either right before the game or as soon as school's over, which that usually happens at the end of the school day. Maybe there's an idea, you know, you could have your pep rally right before the game and try to intimidate the other team. Instead, pep rallies usually are 4 hours before the game happens.
Yeah,
which is fine too. But I've had somebody throw that out to me, like, hey, that's cool, do everything you do, but why do you need the king and queen of courts? Why do you have to have any candidates? You have your Spirit Week, you have homecoming, you invite your alums home, and, you know, if you want to recognize certain academic achievements or certain people, you know, before a particular game, which you do for senior night, you recognize parents and the kids and whatever else, which I always think that's obviously smart, and that includes anybody. That's not a popularity contest. But it is an interesting point. You just do everything you do, but you don't have the pomp and circumstance of, you know, having to set up a, you know, a big stage and platform and make mm-hmm. it this elaborate entertainment venue. You just simply leads all the way up to, you know, the football game on Friday night. And, well, I'm not saying you should or you shouldn't do that, but that's what somebody told me one time, is you could pretty much do all of it. And if you'd want to eliminate the popularity aspect, if that caused people to be sore at other people or whatever the case may be, just eliminate that part. And you still can have everybody included and nobody's higher than other people. And I'm like, that's an interesting point. Of course, the comeback is, well, we've always done it this way. I'm so sick of hearing that. I've heard this for 25, ever since I've been young. I've heard people say, well, this is the way we always do it. I don't give a damn if that's how you always do it. I really don't. Because there's a thing called change. And if you're not going to change and you're not going to adjust, then life's going to pass you by and you're going to fall behind. It's called proactive versus reactive, which you can put down my tombstone when I die. Okay? You can change. It's okay to try to do things differently. It is okay to try things and maybe they don't work. Maybe they do work. If you don't try, you never know. So maybe it'll be better than you ever imagined. But the old comeback is when you ask somebody, well, why do you do this? Well, this is the way we always done it. Okay, so if somebody told you that we're going to sacrifice somebody and they push them off a cliff, are you going to keep doing that? Well, that's just what we always do. I can't stand that comment. I cannot stand it. Well, that's the way we've always done it. I dealt with this when we got involved in the 8-man All-Star games. I heard things right off the bat when we tried to present ideas. Well, we've always done it this way. Yeah, well, maybe we want to advance into the 21st century and do things a little bit differently. Well, we've always had black and white televisions. Dear God, don't bring in color. Well, we never had internet. Yeah, and it's pretty good that we do now. We never have computers. We didn't have phones. We didn't have cars. We rode on horses and buggies. You know, do not get me riled up when you say, when I ask, well, so why do we do that? Or why is that the way it is? And I'm a person to ask a lot of questions. I always have been. I don't feel like there's anything wrong with asking questions. In fact, I think our society should ask questions more often of people that are in charge.
Yeah.
In a responsible, respectful way. But when the only comeback I get is that's the way we've always done it, that is not a good reason. Now, if you want to say this is why we do it, because we found out that this has really worked, we made a change to this back 8 years ago, and we found out that this way works better than this way, and we really, really feel comfortable with it, and so that's the way we're going. Okay, I understand that. But when you flat out just say, well, that's the way we always done it, that's a lazy response. I mean, and imagine if this world did things that way all the time. We would never advance in society. We would never have any technological advancements. We would never have any safety advancements with NASCAR drivers. Well, you know, oh, Dale Earnhardt Sr. died in a car wreck. Yeah, you know, happens. Yeah, but can we do something to make it better? Oh, yeah, it's always been this way. No, they didn't say that. They were like, let's come up with the Hans device. Let's try to come up with something safer. You know, why are we practicing at 4 o'clock after school in 105 degree heat? Well, that's just what we've always done. Well, that's stupid. You can practice in the morning when it's 73. Oh, yeah, but we've never done that before. I don't care. What's the smart way to do it? You might have not had 106 degrees the first week of football 20 years ago either. So you got to adjust with the flow, man. You got to be willing to look at other things and consider other ideas. And when you get stuck in the mud, that's what stops and halts progress. And I think there's no doubt in this world we want progress, right?
I do.
Now, I will say Nebraska football is really exactly the epitome of what I just said. And that is, well,
this is the way we always do it.
We got a new coach. Well, we get a lead in fourth quarter. We find a way to choke and blow it. And that's just the way it always is. You don't think Husker fans today are going, could we change the reasoning for why we do what we do? Matt Rhule, why'd you lose the game? Well, that's just what we do. That's just what we do. That's what we've been doing. That's just the way it is around here. No, that's not what people want to hear. They want to hear how you're going to change so that you win the game instead of losing it like they did last night. I swear, it didn't look like anybody was new on the coaching sideline. It was Matt Rhule dressed up as Scott Frost or Scott Frost dressed up as Matt Rhule. We'll get to that in a moment. So anywho, there's our whole little editorial on popularity, homecoming, all kinds of other stuff, and I hope people know that we're just throwing this out there to have a conversation. It's nothing in regards to, hey, we should eliminate homecoming, we should stop homecomings, and we are homecoming hateful people. No, not at all. It's just things that I'm quizzically asking that I have a platform to throw out there, and maybe I make our listeners go, huh, hadn't thought of it that way, or wow, you're way off base, or wow, you might have a point. Hey, I don't need everybody to agree with you or me.
Yeah,
I don't.
Exactly.
That's why you have a talk show. If everybody agreed, then there wouldn't be much to talk about. So
there'd be a lot of boring in life.
It would be very boring if everybody was exactly the same. If everybody said, well, that's just the way we do it, that would be very boring.
That's helps right. If you don't hate people for having a different opinion than you.
Which is becoming a problem.
It is nice to have differing opinions.
It's okay to listen to other perspectives and then try to put them together, and maybe you come up with one heck of an idea. Maybe. Or you just say, that's the way we always do it. Like Nebraska football. Okay. Local sports, Dusty. Results from yesterday.
Yes, high school volleyball, as you mentioned already, Beloit sweeping Ellsworth and Ellenwood as we started the show with that. Thunder Ridge went 0-2 to Home Triangular, losing in 2 to Plainville and 2 to Northern Valley. You can find the full scores for all this at ncksports.com and full results for all these events as well. Concordia Cross Country Invitational. St. John's Boys took first place. Lance Landina Boy was the first place individual. 11:41:10 was his time. Jonas Letourneau finished second for St. John's. Gabriel Roderick finished in fourth place. And then on the girls' side, Hannah Bridwell of Concordia was the champion. It was a two-mile race for the varsity. Again, full results, ncksports.com. Clay Center tennis squad on girls' side. Clay Center took first place with 19 points. Beloit was second with 17. Osborne third with 13. Gold medal winners for the area, Ashlyn Knight of Beloit in number one singles. Gracie Reiner and Levy Reiner of Osborne in number one doubles. And in number two singles, Maya Mim of Beloit finished with the gold medal. They all went 3-0 on the day. There yesterday at Clay Center. Again, everything you need to know about those events, ncksports.com.
I got some people that's in here. let's see here. I'm spoiled because I don't have any daughters. That's a huge day for the daughters, is what one dad says. There is more drama than you can imagine that goes on. I agree with you 100% that something should be done so it's not just a popularity contest. Everything you say is correct, but you have no idea what daughters are like to deal with this week. That's true. I don't.
Yeah,
I don't.
Yeah.
I told you, God knew I couldn't handle having daughters. That's why I have three boys. But then this has kind of been a full, kind of like a little bit of a joke God's playing on me this week to suck me into this whole thing. He goes, it is quite an honor, though, to have your child picked. Have fun. And he goes, I really wish I had a daughter, is what he says here. And he goes, you have some kahunas to bring this up during homecoming week. Once again, I'm not like complaining. Not complaining. It's just things to bring up.
Thinking out loud about what's going on.
Right.
Because you've never experienced it before.
Right. I've just, all of a sudden, I've got more questions than I've had before this whole thing started. Mm-hmm. And now people are like, God, if there's another Gershner coming up, make sure he's not a candidate. And that's actually part of my plan to make sure. Why do you think I'm doing this? I'm going to make sure this never happens again. I don't care if my youngest wants to be homecoming king or queen. I don't care. We're going to eliminate this right now from the very early going. People have to like, man, could have picked a different kid, right?
Jay says, from a coach's standpoint, homecoming should be done when the team is playing a road game. We also like it when the opponent has homecoming when we play them. Yeah, and why is that? Because it's a distraction to your opponent when they're going through homecoming. Homecoming used to be, in some places, they would do homecoming ceremony at halftime of the game.
Mm-hmm.
Halftime. You think coaches hate it now before the game? Yeah, there used to be they'd have it at halftime. Some schools have homecoming on Saturday. It's not done at the same time as a football game. Now, I haven't seen that myself, but that
yeah, would be I think that's more of a bigger city type of deal from what I've seen. Because I have seen some friends actually from camp in Kansas City area that have done some Saturday type stuff like that.
I don't think that would work in a small town area because, first of all, people want maybe weekend plans, and there's other sports that go on a Saturday. But also, is you know, you get a lot of people to come. It's around the game on a Friday night. Whereas you're going to come back on a Saturday just for a crowning? No, that's not going to.
I mean, that's the. The setting is perfect for gathering people together, right?
Right, right. And I got this one. Get off my lawn. That's good. All right, we gave the results from yesterday, so we're ready to look at football here?
Yes.
All right, finally football is here. High school football week one. We'll start real quickly here with Beloit and Ellsworth. We got a full preview show of the Football Express tonight at 5:40. We will analyze homecoming, should we have it or not in the future. No, actually, we're not going to do that. But anyway, we preview all the area matchups in high school football in North Central Kansas in our listening area, and we hear from some of the coaches for the game, and then we conclude our coverage at 10:05 tonight with local high school scoreboard show brought to you by State Farm Insurance as we give you the scores and hear from maybe a winning coach or two after the games during the scoreboard show. Latest sports information available at ncksports.com. Things are a little bit different tonight for us. Typically, the pregames are at 6:30 on both stations, but with the Beloit-Ellsworth homecoming game being moved back an hour, that changes our schedule just slightly on Z96.3 Lake. So let's go in chronological order. First game on the radio tonight at 6:30, it will be St. John's Tipton at Rock Hills. Dusty will have the call from Mankato. And Dean Gingler, head coach of St. John's Tipton. Rock Hills likely to be a very physical team.
We know they'll be bigger and they'll come with power, so you got to have an attitude going into it that's what you're going to see coming at you. So, I mean, how do you mentally get ready for it and just know that's when they're going to be there? And it's also your first of the year, so you've got to be able to tough it out. Everybody's kind of in that position.
And Wyatt Flynn, the head coach of Rock Hills, keys in St. John's matchup tonight and keys for success for the Grizzlies.
They're moving a lot up on the line. That got us in trouble last year a few times. We got some false starts there to start the game. Kind of didn't work out in our favor off the bat. Start with four punts. But if we can just stay set in our blocks and let them do what they need to do on the defensive side with their movement. But offensively, go back to giving up the big ball. You cannot give up big plays. If we limit the big plays, we'll be in a great spot.
All right. And by the way, I'm going to go off on a tangent real quick because I want to throw out a shout out to my wife. Okay?
Okay.
I've got this all backwards. My wife has suffered through having to have three boys and me, her husband, all these years. She has no daughters. This is God's way of thanking my wife for putting up with all of the testosterone in our house. Even the cat before it died was a male. So instead of God's pulling a prank on me. How selfish can I be? God don't care about me from that standpoint. He's like, dear Lord, your wife deserves something. So let's make sure that your son is one of the five candidates so your wife can enjoy the homecoming as a proud mom, as if her son is like a daughter for this week.
Yeah.
That's the way I should
That's
be looking
the message,
at
message, right?
Yes.
It's funny that
I should
you
be
say
happy for my wife instead of worrying about all the stuff that goes with it.
Yeah, it's funny that you say that because like as I'm thinking, like you just have like in your bloodline, you just have nephews too, right?
Yeah.
Like you don't have any nieces.
On my
right?
side like of the family, it's all boys.
Yeah, I've got seven nephews. You've got the three boys and two nephews, right?
Yep.
And so like it's all boys like for us like, mm-hmm. here at the station. It's like we're just surrounded by them, right?
We don't know what
and it's like I don't
is.
Obviously don't have my own kids, but I always say I have seven boys, right? And so it's like it's just wild to me. Like there's just not a lot of girls that I'm around that my family. Now luckily I have a goddaughter now because one of my friends had a girl, so and it's like it's like what's the big deal?
Yeah, right, we don't understand
stuff, right?
Right. And then on my wife's side of the family, they have all girls. Her sisters have all girls. It's a really odd situation. So yeah, I've had this all twisted the wrong way. I've come to the realization, you know, it ain't about me. It's about my wife finally getting to enjoy something that she otherwise would never enjoy because we have no daughters, unless we're adopting one suddenly. And I don't think we are. So back to football. You've got the game tonight, Mankato. Interesting game because, you know, Rock Hills has a new head coach, but Wyatt Flynn was on the staff last year under Hoda Cindrix. Wyatt Flynn, of course, is a former Rock Hills Grizzly. Played. We called games when he played. Good player and a good person, good coach. And then Dean Gingler at St. John's Tipton. They've got a lot of talent at skill positions that are back, although Daniel Eilert being out is going to certainly hurt their chances, obviously, at any school with the smaller enrollment or the small amount of kids out for football. You have an athletic kid that's hurt. That is a big blow that you've got to deal with. So just briefly, your thoughts on this game tonight, Rock Hills and St. John's Tipton tonight on KD Country 94 and KDCountry94.com, pregame at 6:30.
Yeah, it's a matchup I'm really interested in seeing how it's going to play out because, like you said, Rock Hills, new coach, but again, Wyatt's been there for a long time, and you know, the people on the staff are all from Rock Hills too, and Stuart Vance and Jarrett Christie, so they know what they want, right? They're Grizzlies to the core, right? And I think that's going to help this program build up even more than it did last year. Otis Hendricks did a great job with that crew and getting them where they needed to be and picking up a couple wins, and now they're trying to build off of that. And I think they've got a lot of talent back, skill players, quarterback Cooper McDill. They've got a nice line, good size line, and if they can get it all to gel together, I'm very interested in seeing how they're going to finish. And I think tonight's a good barometer for them against a team like St. John's Tipton that's probably not as good as they were last year based on what they lost with the injury to Daniel Eilert, and then they lose Luke Bates too, who was a very good receiver for them. So it's going to be interesting to see what they're going to do in the passing game because, you know, Tyson Gates appears will be moving out of the quarterback position. Edward Hrynek will play there. Tyson will probably be a target, I would think. So it's just going to be interesting to see the dynamic of what St. John's Tipton is with the personnel that they have because of the injuries. So I'm expecting a hard-fought game tonight. I'm expecting a four-quarter game, and we'll see how it falls. I'm not really leaning toward one place or the other going into this one tonight.
Hey, if there's a point we're on the third quarter, then you can get back for the scoreboard show because I will not be back for the scoreboard show when the game starts at 8 o'clock. So that's St. John's Tipton at Rock Hills tonight on KD Country 94. On Z96.3 Lake, note the later time. Pregame at 7:25. See, it's already affecting our broadcast, this homecoming stuff. It's amazing. So we're starting 5 minutes earlier so I can get the intro out of the way, and then we can roll the pregame interviews, and then I can get to soak in the homecoming experience there with everybody at 7:30. And then the game will start at 8 o'clock. And by the way, I encourage you to get out there. It'll be cooler. They're going an hour later, so it'll be cooler. It'll still be hot, but it'll be cooler. But if for some reason you can't make it out there, we will try to be streaming the homecoming ceremony and hopefully can pick up the audio off the PA announcer like we've done in the past so you could watch it on the stream starting at 7:30, ncksports.com, be a Blade Trojan channel. This is a great matchup for week one. Ellsworth 8-2 a year ago, made it to the playoffs, won a playoff game for the first time in quite some time, lost to Kingman in the second round. Beloit went 8-3, lost their first two games of the year last year. Ellsworth in the week one opener at Ellsworth 14-6, low scoring game, not a lot of offense in that one. And Beloit was the first start for Quinn Eilert at quarterback. Maddox Waters was out hurt. They had a few other injuries early in the season. Vincent Barrett, I think, was out or wasn't nearly. I don't think he played in that one. If he did, he didn't play very much. So Ellsworth won, and they deserved it. They earned it. 14-6 was the final. Beloit then won 8 in a row after losing to Southeast Saline, and then they lost in the quarterfinals to Kingman. So Kingman ended Ellsworth and Beloit's season. Ellsworth has a ton of experience back. They are missing one player tonight due to injury in Wyatt Bonin, who is a very solid linebacker and runs the ball for them, but they got talented quarterback in Will Cravens. They've got Cole Weber's outstanding wide receiver. They got more size than they've had in the past. They're stronger than they've been in the past. And, you know, I think a lot of people just think that Beloit runs over Ellsworth, which they did for quite some time. But since Josh Homolka has been the head coach at Ellsworth, do you know what Beloit's record is against Ellsworth? There's been four meetings. It's okay. 2-2.
I thought this was his fifth year. Yeah.
2-2.
That's
they
what
didn't,
I would have guessed
they
was 2-2.
It's his seventh year, but they didn't play a couple years
Okay.
Because of the way things fell with districts.
Yeah.
But anyway, and I didn't realize that until I was talking to him, and we were talking about that after we recorded the pregame interview, is that, you know, a couple years ago, it was 10-7 halftime. Beloit had two safeties. It was 10-7 at halftime. Beloit was really good that year, and Ellsworth hung with them for a half, and that's when these seniors were sophomores. And you could tell this team was starting to turn things around under Coach Homolka, and the senior class is their key. They took their lumps when they're freshmen and sophomores, and now this is the year they want to cash in. And so then they beat Beloit last year in week one, which gave them a lot of confidence. I think that helped set the table for what they did starting year 7-0 and making the playoffs. And so Josh Homolka is actually 2-2 against Beloit. Mm-hmm. You know, Ellsworth there for many years couldn't come close to beating Beloit. Beloit would win 66-0, 68-6. So I mean, it was always a bloodbath. But now the last few meetings have been very tight or competitive, and now you expect another one here tonight. Brad Gobert, head coach of the Blitz Trojans, in his seventh season at the helm. Blitz been the state quarterfinals last 4 years, on the need to use their size to their advantage against the Bearcats tonight.
Just got to be aggressive, be physical, you know, trust each other, and everybody just do their job. You know, if everybody does their job, you know, we should be good to go. You know, I think that for us, we're going to be bigger and more physical than most of the teams that we play. You know, that's going to be the case tonight. Elsa's got a couple big kids, don't get me wrong, but across the board, we're much bigger than them. So we just got to make sure that we impose our will.
You know, for Beloit, they start out slow the last few years. Of course, it, part of that's the competition they play too. And sometimes they have to have people that are in their first or second starts or whatever it might be, some inexperience in some key positions. And tonight, that's no exception. They're going to have some kids that don't have a lot of varsity experience running back. They're replacing a whole backfield due to graduation. They have the quarterback back in Quinn Eilert. They've got Maddox Waters. They've got Brody Widrig, an outstanding lineman for Beloit. I think Brody Boudreaux could have a really big year for him this year for Beloit. And the linebacking core is very solid. I think Beloit's defense is going to be really good. A lot of people go, well, how are you going to replace Grady Seifert? Well, you don't replace him with one person, just like you don't replace Tyreek Hill with one wide receiver. Mm-hmm. But Beloit's got plenty of big kids that are strong, that have been in the weight room, that are going to get opportunities. They're deeper, maybe, than they have been in a few of these years recently because they have 52 kids out. So I think they'll be fine. Yeah, there won't be a guy making 25 tackles for loss like Grady Seifert, but I think collectively they're going to do a good job. So I think defensively you'll be fine. Offensive line, they got three starters back. They're big on the line, even with Seifert have graduated. To me, the bigger question is who's going to run the ball and who's going to be effective running the ball, and can they hold on to the ball? Because if Beloit tonight doesn't turn the ball over and avoids those horrible penalties that put them in a second down and 18, a hold or something, then I think Beloit's going to have success tonight, and Ellsworth offense will be on the sideline a lot. I think it's going to take Beloit, you know, quite a few plays to go down and score, which means you got to avoid that penalty. You got to avoid that bad snap, or if they do the play action passing game, a guy's open, you can't be overthrowing him. You got to hit him because you're only going to get a few opportunities a game to hit those big plays. And I know Beloit's been working on that play action passing game, and they need to take advantage of having a 6'5 kid in Maddox Waters. They need to. If they don't get him the ball very much this year, then he's being wasted.
Yeah.
It's just, I mean, you know, Austin Budke was kind of that way back in the day, or Beloit. I thought there was times they could have thrown the ball to him more often. Just throw it up. Mm-hmm. Just let him throw it high and let him go get a jump ball. You know, and sometimes you get pass interference, and I think a lot of teams forget that they can actually just throw it up and let their kid make a play. What corner in 2A is going to be able to go man to man and jump as high as Maddox Waters when they're giving up about 8 inches in height?
Yeah,
or six or five. Yeah. I mean, sometimes it doesn't have to be a beautiful throw; just throw it up there to make sure he gets it. But if you underthrow it or overthrow it when they're open, or of course you drop a wide open pass, we saw Rishi Rice do that for the Chiefs in a preseason game. But that's something that Beloit's been working on. So if Beloit can hit you with the play action passing game a few times and keep you honest and keep a guy out of the box to try to stop the run, then Beloit's going to be a lot tougher to stop. So my questions are Beloit. I think defensively they're going to be outstanding. I think offensively is the question. Who's going to be the main ball carrier? Because last few years it's been ride one of the main running backs a ton. Are they going to distribute the ball more to where there's going to the fullback going to carry the ball more? Will there be, you know, two or three different backs rotating in? Maybe you got your version of thunder and lightning like you've seen sometimes at some colleges and pro teams. You know, who's going to be the guys that are going to what's the word, step forward and be the running backs to carry the load? And Quinn Eilert, I think a quarterback, is going to run the ball more this year than in previous years. That's something that Beloit did with Brad Gobert and Hudson Gray back in the day when they first started. And so now maybe they're going to run the quarterback more as well. And so I think the questions for Beloit is on offense. I think offensive line will be fine. And it might not even matter who they put in the backfield with that line and how big they are against some of the teams they're going to play. There might be such a big hole that Dusty and I might be able to get 4 or 5 yards. But when they get to the playoffs, which they will, I would be shocked if they don't make the playoffs. If Beloit makes the playoffs, that's when they're going to have a running back or two that have emerged. Somebody that hopefully can hit the big play with some speed. That is a concern with Beloit in regards to speed at some of the skill positions. And overall, that's a bit of a concern. You don't have Logan Arrowsmith, the home run hitter this year. And of course, we mentioned don't have Grady Seifert. So I think it's going to be interesting to see what Beloit does early in the year, and it's a great barometer to play a very good Ellsworth team in week one. And Ellsworth, I know, is looking forward to it, and Beloit, I know, feels like if we played Ellsworth later in the season last year, we would have beat them. They just caught us in week one.
Yeah. You know, Ellsworth was probably a better team later in the season, too, last
year.
True.
Right? That's true. They both were better.
Yeah, and they both lost to Kingman in a very similar fashion, yes. Right? So it's hard to judge whether that would have happened, but this is your opportunity, right? Like, right. So you talked about
Ellsworth's
it
got
year.
More starters back than Beloit does.
Oh, yeah. It's like you talked about it last year, but now you didn't get the opportunity to play him again, but now you do.
Here
like, you have him. Maybe it's different guys. It's obviously not the same team for Beloit, but there are plenty of people that were on that team that played a significant role last year, mm-hmm. and they want to beat Ellsworth this year. So this is your opportunity, a very experienced Ellsworth team and a team that's pretty confident coming into the season, it sounds like, with Coach Amolka. So, you go out there and you play and see if you can get the job done here tonight and start the season off in the right way. It'd be a great win for Beloit if they can get it done tonight to start the season.
And if they don't, that's not the end of the world.
No, it's not at all.
Because it has no impact on the playoffs or district races or whatever, but it is a good barometer game for both teams. And I like to see really good matchups in week one and week two because I hate to see teams that you think are going to be good, but they have a cakewalk through the first three or four games because you really don't know how good they really are. But when you have
the first time they line up against somebody that's as good or maybe a little better, mm-hmm. they're not ready for it.
Yeah, I'll never forget like Larry Glatzik. He's one of the. I mean, I've had a great relationship with Larry Glatzik. He used to be the head coach at Centralia for football, athletic director, retired recently. His son, Michael, is the head coach of the defending state champion in 2A Nemaw Central. So they had a great coaching tree. Mm-hmm. Michael, I called games when he was in high school, for crying out loud. That's how old I am. But Larry told me Centralia would always play Silver Lake early in the year. Centralia was a 1A school at the time, and Silver Lake was a juggernaut in 3A at the time. They were making the state title almost every year. They were one of the favorites every year. And they usually play week one. And I said to him, I said, you know, why do you play Silver Lake? You know, that's a tough game. You know, 1A versus 3A, and you're good. Don't get me wrong, you're good. And I think Centralia lost most of those matchups. I don't know if they ever beat them. But I said, why do you play Silver Lake right off the bat? And he said, we are going to learn more by playing Silver Lake, win or lose, than by beating somebody 50-0. He goes, I'm going to have a way better idea what we need to work on between week one and week two than I will when we have a patsy. Absolutely correct. Absolutely correct.
Yeah.
There is no reward. There's no extra reward you get for going undefeated. Well, we went 13-0 undefeated, and we went 12-1. We both won state titles. Yeah, you both won the same. You won the same trophy. You don't get an extra trophy for going undefeated. Is it nice to go undefeated? Hell yeah, it's nice
a cool
to go
story.
Undefeated.
Yeah, it's like it's
something great.
Always,
perfect season.
You'll never forget, right?
Like, right.
You also never forget going 12-1 and winning the state championship.
You could go. You can go 12-0 and you haven't played anybody, and you lose a state title game. And why? Because you didn't play anybody.
Yeah.
But if you lose week one, and you win a state championship at the end of the year in your class. You may go back and go, you know, week one is when, or we played a great hard team in week three. You know, man, that was the game. That was the game. That told us that we can do this, even though we lost. We like, wow, we stood toe-to-toe with that really good team, higher classification, and we know that we're good. But when you play teams that you know you're far superior than, you think you're good, but you really truly don't know how good you are until you actually get hit in the mouth. And tonight, Beloit and Ellsworth, they're going to hit each other in the mouth.
Yeah, exactly. You're talking about all that. It made me think back to when St. John's Tithon boys won the state championship, right?
I was thinking
the
same thing.
They're playing Plainville, and they wanted the undefeated season so bad. And, you know, I knew a lot of those kids on that team because two of them were my cousins, right? And so, like, after they lost to Plainville in overtime and after the game, I'm like, nobody's going to remember this when you're holding up that trophy in 2 weeks. And they were holding up that trophy in 2 weeks. But if they had not played that game and had that experience, they might not have been holding up that trophy. You know, they learned a lot about themselves, like you're talking about with Centralia playing Silver Lake week one. In this game, even though you lost it and you wanted that 26-0 season, you didn't get it. But you still got the trophy and you still won and you understood what it took to get to that place. And, you know, good coaches are going to use that to their advantage, and good athletic directors and coaches are going to schedule their seasons like that if they can.
If they
sometimes
can,
you can't do it because your league takes up too many of your games and you can't find another team to play because you're in a league that has too many teams in it already.
Right.
But if you have an AD and a coach that understand how to schedule and get yourself in a position to be good in the postseason, it's unbelievably beneficial for you. And you're not going up against teams that you're not ready for.
Listen, we see this all the time, the Twin Valley League.
Yeah.
I mean, we see all the time. Their league, and there's
and
not,
they benefit from playing in that league, too.
Do. Well,
they don't have
what
to
I'm
schedule
saying.
Them, right?
Right. That's what I'm saying, though. What I'm saying is there's not a single person in NPL that will look you in the eye and tell you that the NPL is a better league than the TVL.
No.
It's not. It's not even close. The TVL is a deeper, better league, has been in all sports for a very long time. It's better than not only the NPL, it's better than any other league in the state of Kansas. The championships bowed that out and all the state semifinals, runner-ups.
Yeah, the only small league that would even hold a candle would be the Central Prairie League.
But how many times do we see that, you know, Axtell and Hanover go toe-to-toe during the regular season, meet in the playoffs in football, and then they might play a Thunder Ridge or they play an Osborne, and there's times Osborne and Thunder Ridge have played toe-to-toe with them, but Osborne and Thunder Ridge haven't had as many tests as those teams have had, and you can see that come out. Mm. And you can see that it benefited those teams from up in the TVL. And then sometimes, like you said, you can play somebody out of your league, like Centralia playing Silver Lake. And by the way, Lance Bergman, I remember talking to him about it. He's told me before. He says, you know, I don't know if we win a state title if we do beat Plainville. And he actually made it sound like he thought that probably losing a Plainville allowed them to win a state title. That loss was very beneficial to them.
Yeah.
So sometimes
it was understanding. It was refocus. It was
beatable.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so sometimes you need to overcome some adversity. Sometimes a loss isn't the end of the world. It definitely is not the end of the world in high school football in the state of Kansas if you lose a game before you get to district. And it's not the end of the world now with the new district system. Used to be district champ, and that's all that went. Now it's not the end of the world if you lose a district game either. So you got you can lose a couple. So it's not you've got more room for error, and that's why high schools, if they can, and athletic directors, if they can, and it's not easy to match up schedules. If you can schedule at least a tough team or two outside your district schedule, you believe you need that, you really should schedule it instead of just going for the automatic win. Now maybe you're going to schedule the easy game on homecoming, which some people do. I've had athletic directors criticize, oh yeah, you picked the hardest team on our schedule to have homecoming. I didn't know we had to pick a game that's a guaranteed W on homecoming, because all the homecoming stuff is over prior to the game except for the dance. What, you think everybody's going to mope around? Well, yeah, the football team might if they lose. I get that part. So that was the reason people would bring that up, is like, well, a smart athletic director picks an easy game for homecoming. Well, that's not, it doesn't always line up that way. And then what's more important, homecoming or for the football coach, getting your team primed to make a run in the playoffs? Trust me, the coach will say 1,000 times over, yeah, I'd rather play the tough team to get us better so that we could win a state title.
Yeah.
And homecoming, the dance will happen whether we win or lose.
A lot of coaches that take it as a disrespect if you're scheduled for somebody's homecoming.
Yeah, sometimes that happens. That's absolutely true. That's a good point. Did you go through the football schedule?
Not the rest of the immediate area schedule tonight. But Osborne, they're playing a junior high game at Hill City first, so it might be a little bit later than 7 when varsity kicks off. We'll start junior high at 5, and then they'll have the varsity game behind that, Osborne at Hill City. Lakeside hosts Lynn tonight in the NPL, Sylvan Lucas at Lincoln. Thunder Ridge is at Alma, Nebraska, who's already 2-0 this year. They played 2 games up there in Nebraska already. Pike Valley hosting Reno County Homeschool, playing their first season of football in Southern Clouds at Northern Valley in 6-man. Smith Center opens at Phillipsburg in the MCL, and in the NCKL, Concordia is at Chapman here tonight for the season openers.
Yeah.
Schedules all ncksports.com for the rest of the Northern Plains League North Central Activities Association. So check it out there. Results, schedule, scores, everything you need to know at the website.
Right, absolutely. Let's see. Yeah, I'm going to read an email I got here from somebody about homecoming, which is good. I'm glad that somebody can reply and give perspectives, because, like I said, I'm not sitting here and talking about how we need to. Has anybody on this show said eliminate homecoming?
No,
not at all. Not at all. But we'll get to that here in a little bit. Well, maybe I should put a bow on this real quick. So anyway, I got an email from somebody that says, yes, this stuff has gotten blown out of proportion. Yeah, I would agree with that. But this person says, what other time does your child get dressed up? I don't mean slacks and maybe a good shirt. I mean suit and tie, etc. Church, no. School, no. Movies, no. So as I told my son, I want you to be comfortable in whatever clothes you have on, that the you does not change, which is great. Great. I like that. That's a good line. And you may be required to be in a suit, sports jacket, casual, whatever. If you've never done that, you will not be comfortable with it. Prom, homecoming, etc. gives kids a taste of that, although it has been blown out of proportion. I think it's crazy to spend $600 on a dress for homecoming or prom, but I do feel it's good for kids to dress up and be civil and endure a night that maybe they're not real comfortable, but they can put that aside, enjoy themselves anyway, and learn how to be them, whatever situation they are in. If a guy is cool
cool in jeans and t-shirts, but totally obnoxious when he's in a suit, well, then there's a problem. If a girl is a nice girl, but when she dresses in a $600 dress her parents got her turns into a snotty grump, then there's a problem. Back in the day, people would dress up to go to church. No longer is that the way things are done. Or they would dress up to go to a wedding. Not so much anymore. Or a funeral. Whatever goes, etc. Way back when I was in school, homecoming candidates were a guy playing the sport and a girl in the pep club, and they were seniors. I was not in pep club, but I was in band. Some thought that should have counted, but when I was a senior, I really didn't care much about being homecoming queen. And guys need to know what it's like to do something that's about being courteous and respectful of girls and vice versa. I think it would improve things if the week of Spirit Week, an hour of class time is taken to teach kids how to dance. The two-step, the waltz, etc., and teach etiquette, teach manners, etc. Many kids are never in situations where those are taught. I think it could be fun. I read the last part now as I read down here. Not necessarily something to share with my name on the radio, but just some thoughts. Whoops. Well, I didn't say the name, so yeah. I protected the person. I will not say their name. But I think those are really good points. And I think two things stand out in that email to me. One, this line. I told my son, I want you to be comfortable in whatever clothes you have on. That the you does not change. And in my interpretation, no matter what you wear, that should not change the you.
Yeah.
So I love that one. And the other one that she says here is really an interesting perspective to me. Maybe during the week of Spirit Week, and I know it's tough, you have curriculum, you have to have so many minutes for certain classes or whatever, but she's right. Maybe you have a pride time. I think it's called pride time at Beloit, or a study hall for me when I was in school. But if everybody had an hour of study hall or pride time, why couldn't you, for homecoming week, make that to where you did teach kids how to dance, or you taught kids proper manners, or how to, you know, hold a fork properly when you're eating at the meal at prom. You know, etiquette is what she's talking about, this person. I think that's interesting. I think that's very interesting, because to me, that would be something that could help you down the line. And I'm not saying that having homecoming now doesn't help you down the line. It can. Mm-hmm. Okay. But these would be a little bit more specific things. You know, and she talks about being respectful of girls and so forth for the guys. I think it's some interesting points that person shared on the email, and I am very glad that they shared it. I love different perspectives.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think it's always, like we were talking about earlier, it's good to look at things just through different glasses, right? Everybody can have their opinions sure. about these things, and we can kind of look at them and see, you know, hey, oh, yeah, I agree with that. Or maybe I don't agree with it, but it's like something that I respect your opinion still, and I kind of like that you shared those things, and, you know, we move on with life, right? And But there obviously are some very good points there.
No doubt. All right, so we turn our attention to college football.
Kirkcasic. Clean snap, good hole, got it up! And it's good! And Minnesota comes back to win it! 13-10!
Well, the Huskers began the Matt Rhule era last night, much like how the Scott Frost era ended, with a close loss. Nebraska lost their season opener at Minnesota last night 13-10, trailed 3-0 late in the first half. You've liked a lot of offense. You didn't see that last night. Nebraska got to Minnesota's one before they threw a really bad interception. Huskers led 10-3, but a Husker fumble with about 4.5 minutes to go gave the Gophers an opportunity to tie the game, and they scored on a fourth down play, a great catch, and getting the toe down in the end zone by their receiver, and they tied the game with 2:32 to go. Then the Huskers are driving for a potential game-winning field goal when quarterback Jeff Sims threw an interception over the middle with a minute to go. So now suddenly Nebraska is thinking maybe we'll get in field goal range to win it. Instead, they throw the pick. Minnesota then takes over around midfield, and they're able to move the ball down about 20 yards and kick a game-winning field goal. You just heard at the buzzer, 47-yarder, and Minnesota steals the win 13-10. It's the 16th time in the past 5 seasons the Huskers blew a second-half lead, and Scott Frost probably hanging out with his buddies watching this game, sending a text message to Matt Rhule saying, hold my beer. Matt Rhule, on the heartbreaking loss. The Husker fans have to feel pretty cursed right now.
Obviously, that was disappointing. A lot of credit to them. Made 2 huge plays down the stretch. And I just told our team, and I want to make sure I say this, like, there is no there's no such thing as close losses. I already know a lot of people say, just another close loss. As I said to our guys, like, we can be a really, really good football team. To think that we were minus, to turn the ball over four times. I think that we turned the ball going over in the half in the end zone. I think that we turned it over twice in the last 2 minutes of the game, and they still had to kick a walk-off field goal. Really shows what I think we can be.
Yeah, they were minus three in the turnover category and still, should have won. So, but too many turnovers.
And always in the worst spots. Again,
always
right?
The worst time. Yeah. It's just watching the same movie over and over and over again. Same ending, and yet you keep watching it. Nebraska's next game will be next Saturday at Colorado against Deion Sanders and the Colorado Buffaloes. Before we talk KU and K-State, to wrap up the show, ACC presidents have voted to extend conference invitations to Stanford, California, and SMU. They announced that today. The three schools, should they formally apply for membership, which I don't know why they wouldn't, will join the league for the 2024 college football season. Stanford and Cal are expected to enter the ACC from the Pac-12, taking reduced media rights revenue shares around 30%. SMU, however, will forego media rights revenue for its first 7 years as an ACC member, moving from the American. The ACC is expected to receive around $72 million in additional media rights revenue as a result of this expansion, with $50 to $60 million of that revenue being made available for the ACC to distribute as part of either a revised financial model or incentive program. In other words, Stanford and Cal are going to come in and accept a lesser share. SMU is not going to have any money. They don't get paid anything for the first 7 years because that's how desperate they are to be a part of a big conference. And Florida State and Clemson have been complaining about how they don't get enough money. They're going to get more money because of this expansion. All three schools, along with the rest of the league, may be eligible to earn additional revenue based on incentives tied to success in other major sports, especially football, men's basketball. That's what some Florida State's been pushing for, and Clemson should too. An incentive distribution model is still under discussion by ACC. Many expect one to be formally introduced for next athletic season in 2024. Once again, this isn't about should Cal be in the ACC or Stanford should be ACC, SMU be in ACC. This isn't about geography. It isn't about academics. It isn't about the fans. It's about greed. It is about money. It's about keeping up with the Joneses. And you know what has created this is the Florida State in particular has made this happen with their complaining, their whining, their belly aching, thinking they're better than everybody in ACC. They actually act like they're Texas. That's what they've done recently. They've been blunt about it. And honestly, they got something accomplished because now they're going to get more money by adding these schools, and in order to get their vote, Florida State had to change their vote. Originally, they weren't for this, from what I read. You had to give them more in order for them to stay, although I don't know where they were going to go. Does that sound familiar? That sounded a lot like Texas back in the day with the Big 12? Yeah. Well, we'll stay, but we need more. And eventually, Nebraska and Colorado said, "The hell with you. We're out of here. We're tired of Texas running this league." Now, we're to the point where it almost sounds like Florida State, and I think Clemson quietly, are two of the main brands, obviously, ACC, are helping run the ACC. But what is your option? You lose them, your conference is maybe dead in the water. Whereas the Big 12 somehow survived losing those two big fish in Oklahoma and Texas. The ACC lose Florida State and Clemson. They're all of a sudden in a bad situation.
I can't foresee any problems happening with that with Florida State.
No.
So much more money.
No, because what's going to happen in a few years or even next year, they'll be unhappy with what they're getting. Or the next big TV deal for the Big Ten SEC. Well, if we can't compete, unfair advantage, we need more and more. We need more. We need more. We need more. Well, go out and win a lot, and then I guess you'll get more because it'll be an incentive-based program.
Yeah, it's... I guess if you want to keep it together and if you're those teams down at the bottom of the totem pole, you know, the whoever they are, the Georgia Techs, probably the world teams like that, Wake Forest, places like that, then you're probably happy that you're just keeping it together. Kind of like we were as K-State and KU fans, right? Like
it's just better than the alternative
together because it looked like it might die.
Mm-hmm.
And so the first time around when we kept Texas and gave them what they wanted. Right.
Yeah.
And but now it's like just there's an example of this in college sports, and it did not end well for your conference as a whole. I mean, I think people still think the Big 12 is better with Texas and Oklahoma in it financially, right?
Right.
But it's they've had a commissioner that's fixed that part of it, but it's like I can see some problems with this model
yes.
moving down the road when
Yes.
When you're making all this money and you're making more than us, and we did the same thing you did.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. KU opens their season tonight as they host Missouri State, 7 o'clock on ESPN Plus. We will not have the game on the radio because local comes first. So we're going to have high school football games at both the radio stations. And, if, you know, it'd be nice if, you know, college could stay away from Friday night, but they won't because it's about money. We understand they don't care about high school stuff until they're recruiting high school kids, and then they care about high school. And that applies to every single college university out there. Jayhawks are in their third season under Coach Lance Leipold. KU plays again next Friday night, too, which is just super for us high school people that also like to watch KU sports or K-State sports. K-State's got a Friday night game at Stillwater October 6th later this year. So it's going to affect KU and K-State football fans when they're tied or connected to high school sports on Friday nights. Unfortunate, but once again, nobody said that anybody cares about the fans per se. We've established that. Now, Lance Leipold on what he wants to see in the opener against the Bears tonight as they will take on Missouri State.
I want us to play just like we're playing anybody each and every week, that we go out and play to our best and show the improvement in every area that we need to be physical. We need to be physical on both sides of the line of scrimmage, and it establishes itself right there and to have a presence. And much like all of you, we've got a lot of new names and faces a little bit in that front, and I'm going to be excited to see them in live action.
All right. They have a lot of experience back. Offensively, Kansas could be better than last year. Brian Haney said they averaged 36 points a game. The voice of the Jayhawks was with us yesterday on the Sports Ticket. If you missed that interview, it's on our podcast page, Sports Ticket, katiecunch94.com. And he said, listen, I think this offense will be better. I think it's – and they play a pretty good schedule. He thinks they can average 40 a game. Well, if they average 40 a game, they're gonna do okay. The problem for me is the defense better? Because I don't know if it is. And the secondary is fine, but I don't know if they're going to get a pass rush. They were bad against the run last year. And if you can't stop the run, you're in big trouble. Brian's told us yesterday when I asked his prediction for this team, he said 8 wins, 8-4. He said the floor is 6 wins, and 9 or 10 wins would be the ceiling. Now, I love Brian Haney. He is a great dude. Brian's a great dude. And I know he is seeing it through the crimson blue glasses. I don't see that at all. Now that doesn't mean that he's wrong, and it doesn't mean I'm right, because we'll find out. And I don't think Dusty agrees with Brian's predictions either, by the way.
I definitely don't agree with the floor.
I agree with that, totally. I think the floor for Kansas is 4-8.
Yeah.
I think Kansas, so you look at their schedule, I think there's Missouri State a win. Illinois could be a loss. That's 1-1. At Nevada, I'm not going to say that's a win for sure. Okay, fine. 2-1. BYU, okay, say they're a win. That's what, 3-1? At Texas, that's going to be, people are going to say a loss, 3-2. Central Florida at home, at Oklahoma State, probably lose at Oklahoma State's what a lot of people would say. Central Florida, I don't know. Oklahoma at home, I don't know. At Iowa State, I don't know. Texas Tech at home, Texas Tech is ranked, KU is not, so people could say that's a loss, but that's in Lawrence. Hosting K-State, well, KU doesn't beat K-State in football, so you may usually say that's a loss. And then at Cincinnati, and we don't know how good Cincinnati is going to be. Listen, there's not, I mean, honestly, after the Missouri State game, I could argue that every game on KU's schedule, I mean, legitimately, not, I know it's cliche to say, well, you could win or lose any of these games. No, I mean, if I look at KU's schedule, if I'm looking at Illinois, I'm looking at BYU, I'm looking at Central Florida, Oklahoma State, Oklahoma, Iowa State, Texas Tech, K-State, Cincinnati, I skipped the Texas one. I don't think they will win at Texas, but maybe they got a shot. But what I'm saying is that there's 12 games on that schedule, and I came up with about 9 of them that could go either way.
Yeah.
So if you're going to get the 8-4, as Brian predicted, then you need a lot of those games to go your way. And they got a few of those games to go their way last year. The West Virginia game, they could have easily have lost. They had another one early in the year that they could have easily have lost. So some things broke their way last year, and they went 6-7, losing a hard, tough-fought bowl game to Arkansas. I think the floor is 4-8. And that's what you said. The ceiling to me, for me, the ceiling is 8-4. For me, the ceiling with Kansas is 8, maybe 9-3.
I could get with you if you said 9.
I can't go 10.
Yeah.
I can't go 10. The ceiling to me is 9 at the most. I think this team is going 6-6. That's my prediction. And that's what Brian says is the floor. I think the floor is 4-8. I think Kansas is going to be a team that could very well be better this year.
but record wise might not be.
Yeah.
So I think they're, I predict they go 6-6. 7-5 would be good. 7-5 assures you a winning season. 6-6, 7-5 gets you in another bowl game. And by the way, Jalen Daniels has to stay healthy. If Jalen Daniels, he's nicked up already.
Yeah.
If Jalen Daniels is not healthy for a good portion of this year, Jason Bean is a talented quarterback, but it's not like he won a lot of games when he was their quarterback. Now, that wasn't all his fault. The defense was atrocious the last half of the season, and I don't know if it's going to be better this year. They lost a couple guys that could pass rush the quarterback. They don't got this year. So that makes me worry about the quarterback all day to throw. I don't care how great your secondary is. If your quarterback, the opposing quarterback's got 6 seconds to throw every time, that it's tough to cover that long without holding and pass interference. I think Kansas has got problems on defense. I think offensively is going to be too much pressure on this team to outscore everybody, which is going to make for entertaining football, don't get me wrong. However, if Daniels gets hurt or isn't 100%, I know they got good running backs, offensive line's got experience coming back, they got good receivers, but Jason Bean, as well as he played at times last year, at the end of the day, they didn't win. They only won, I don't even know if they won, they were 5-0 when Daniels got hurt against TCU. They won one game the rest of the year, and I don't know if that was Daniels starting that game late in the year or if it was Bean that started it, but let's say Bean started it. That means that Bean only won one game as a starting quarterback last year. So even though he's talented and they love what he's done in camp and everything, it doesn't translate into, you normally don't win a lot of games with your backup quarterback, is my point.
I can't, if Jalen Daniels, if I don't know that he's 100% healthy, I definitely can't go floor 6 wins, ceiling 10 wins per KU. It's not possible.
No,
and I think I've got to think about that when I'm talking about what KU could be this year, too, because I think people were just expecting that Jalen Daniels is okay. And I don't think he is. There's some stuff out there, and I don't know who you trust on Twitter sometimes, but there's one person out there that follows KU. I don't know how right he is a lot, but he doesn't think Jalen's even going to play tonight, right? Like, he might not even be out there this evening because they're just trying to rest him against a team like this. I can't, like, in my gut, even with Jalen Daniels healthy, I feel like this is going to be so much like Bill Snyder at K-State. Came in that second year, they went 7-4. They won two games against, like, one double A back then, it's called FCS now, so they weren't eligible for a bowl game because they only had 5 wins against 1A. And so they went 7-4 that year, and then the next year they went 5-6. They had that step backwards in year 3, and I could just so see that happening with Lance Leipold. I think Kansas is going to go 5-7 this year, and people are going to probably blast me for that if they're KU fans. But I really just – it's a gut feeling that I think they're going to take a step back, and then it's going to move into a bigger step forward, kind of like what K-State did, right? Like, if he can keep this – program continuing to go in the right direction, I can see them being a 6-7-8-9 win team in the future, right? And continually, and being a regular bowl participant, right? If things go the right way. But just for some reason, as hot as it got last year to start the season, and I know they didn't go 7-4, but they went 6-6 last year, it's just a gut feeling that I have that they're not going to make a bowl this year.
They're not going to make a bowl.
I've got them at 5-7. The schedule is, and if Daniels isn't healthy, it's just like, it's tough.
My first reaction was 6-6. I could easily see 5-7. I think there's even a chance at 4-8. For me, the window is 5-7 to 7-5. That's what I really see.
Yeah.
I think if they catch a break here or there, they could be 7-5, assuring a winning season before a bowl game. But I think they could easily go 5-7. And if the defense is worse than last year and Daniels isn't healthy, then absolutely it's going to be 4-8 or worse. So,
yeah.
And by the way, we haven't even talked about special teams, which was not good last year. The kicking game was bad. I mean, Kansas' offense covered up warts last year. They covered up warts.
Yeah.
And so I'm not saying I'm not optimistic. I think they'd be fun to watch, but I tend to agree with you. I think they're going to make a lateral move or even take a half a step back in the win column this year. I don't have them winning more than last year. I got them 6-6. And then depends on the bowl matchup. Maybe they would go 7-6.
Yeah.
That's the best I see right now. And yep. KU fans will be screaming. You know, those newly anointed KU rabid football fans. Oh, it's a tradition like no other since I became a fan last year. All right, K-State opens their season tomorrow night at home against Southeast Missouri at 6 o'clock on ESPN+. Wildcats hoping to build off a Big 12 championship last season, picked preseason number 2 in the Big 12 behind Texas. Southeast Missouri is coached by Silver Lake grad Tom Matukowicz, who was an assistant at 4 colleges in Kansas during his career before getting the head job at Southeast Missouri back in 2014. Chris Kleiman on the matchup against Southeast Missouri.
We know this is going to be a really good football game. Coach Tuke does a great job at SEMO. I've known about his program in SEMO for a long time, and they're a playoff team perennially in the FCS, probably the best team in the OVC this year, and they have really good talent. So we've got to play exceptional football to give ourselves an opportunity to be successful.
Now, K-State's schedule, you know, they got to go to Missouri. I think they should win their first two games, SEMO, and then Troy at home. At Missouri, Missouri's going to be ready because they got blown out and embarrassed at Manhattan, but I think K-State's the better team. Central Florida at home, I think they win. At Oklahoma State's going to be an interesting game. I don't know a lot about Oklahoma State right now. At Texas Tech, a lot of people seem to be on the Texas Tech bandwagon liking them. They're ranked in the top 25 to start the year, which I don't know if I buy that. TCU at home, Houston at home, at Texas, home to Baylor, at Kansas, and then home to Iowa State. I got K-State at 9-3. But honestly, when I look at the schedule, I may be sitting here saying 10-2 because I can't tell you for sure what game they're going to lose. I guess people are going to say at Texas, but and I know they've struggled against Texas, but they're due to beat Texas. But okay, fine. Let's make that a throwaway game. So K-State loses to Texas. Who else on the schedule do you say K-State's going to lose to for sure? There's no Oklahoma on the schedule, and K-State's been beating them the last few years anyway. Yeah. So who's K-State going to lose to? Like, if you look at their schedule, do you automatically say they're losing to Texas? Okay, fine. Go with one. What other game are they automatically going to lose? Because every year you look at K-State's schedule, you're like, well, they're going to lose those three games. And then there's four or five that could go either way. So K-State's going to be anywhere from 6-6 and 9-3, right? Something like that? 6-6, 8-4. Well, you look at the schedule, it doesn't look that daunting to me.
No.
SEMO at home, Troy at home, 2-0. At Missouri, I think they win, 3-0. Central Florida at home, I think they win, 4-0. At Oklahoma State,
Stillwater's a place that Klima has not had success at yet, and that's one that I'm probably going to chalk as their first loss. I don't know what Oklahoma State has this year. I haven't really kept up on that, but for some reason, Stillwater's been a struggle. And a Friday night going on the road, just messing up their week, I, for some reason, think they're going to lose that one.
So 4-1. At Texas Tech, I think they'd find a way to win that, but they could lose that. 5-1, are you going to agree with me on that one?
Maybe? Yeah.
Okay.
I'm with you. They could easily lose it too.
TCU at home could go either way, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Houston at home is not going to be as easy as people think. At Texas, most people would say a loss. Baylor at home, you know, I don't know a lot about Baylor. That maybe could go either way. I don't know enough about Baylor. And that'll be in November. A lot of things could change, injuries, whatever. At Kansas, I still think K-State's the better program, the better team, and winning at Kansas, although I think Kansas is closing the gap. And then Iowa State at home, I think they would win. So, I mean, I said 9-3 because Oklahoma State, Texas, let's say they lose, they're both road games. And then if you assume they lose those two, you could probably also assume the odds are some of those 50-50 games, they're gonna trip up in one of them, you know.
There's a game
Will Howard has a bad game.
For some reason they don't have it.
The defense has a bad day, turnovers, whatever. But for me, K-State's ceiling, listen, I think K-State's ceiling is 11-1.
I'd agree with that.
I think their floor is 8-4. And I think where they're going to be is 9-3, which may or may not put them in a Big 12 title game. Because if they lose, if they lose three conference games, they're probably not in the title
game. Well, and there's so many teams, too. Yeah. So it's going to be
different.
It's
going to
be weird when you look at the end of the season.
Here. Yeah. So you agree with my floor and my ceiling?
I've been saying 9-3
okay.
ever since the schedule came out. I don't know, you know, where those three are going to come.
Ceiling 11-1, or you think I'm a little too optimistic?
No, ceiling can obviously. I think ceiling, if they're just play out of their mind, could be 12-0. But okay. I don't think that's realistic. I think they'll lose at least one game. They always do that. They probably shouldn't sometimes too, right? Mm-hmm. Like, but yeah, 9-3 has kind of been what I've been looking at. I think that, you know,
what's their floor?
People are pretty bullish on K-State. I think the floor is 7-5. You said 8-4. I think just, depending on what could happen during the season, and I, you know, people love Will Howard, and I get it, but this guy still hasn't started an entire season
at
quarterback,
right.
So we don't really know.
That's true.
Everything about what he is,
and then if he gets hurt,
him.
Who's
He's
your backup?
He's a great kid.
Is it Rubley? Yeah. Is it Johnson? Who's going to play?
And there's a fight for that there right is. Now. And I was like, if you know, if you're thinking about the future, you hope it's Johnson. But if you're thinking about somebody that's been here that knows the system better, it's probably Rubley. So I don't, you know, I don't know how that's going to work if Will Howard goes down, but that has been an issue consistently for K-State over the past 4 or 5 years is a quarterback getting hurt.
Mm-hmm.
Skylar Thompson gets hurt. Will Howard has to come in. Mm-hmm. Adrian Martinez gets hurt. Will Howard has to come in. Could Will Howard stay healthy? I think he's bigger. I think he's going to be more physical and a presence that can take more hits and do those things. But there's been a while since there's been a year where this dude was the quarterback the whole year and you didn't have to worry about him getting hurt.
That's right. That's true. All right, so KU and K-State both win their openers. I think we would agree on that, right?
Yeah, for sure.
All right, K-State, 6 o'clock tomorrow night against Southern Missouri, and KU hosting Missouri State tonight at 7 o'clock. Both those games on ESPN+. Other Big 12 games, Colorado at TCU at 11 tomorrow morning. Arkansas State at Oklahoma at 11 a.m. See if Oklahoma bounce back in year two under Brent Venables. Northern Iowa's at Iowa State at 1 o'clock. Eastern Kentucky at Cincinnati at 2:30. I noticed the Big 12 schedule is longer than normal. Oh, yeah, we added four schools. Rice is at Texas. Go Rice. Southeast Missouri is at K-State. Central Arkansas at Oklahoma State at 6 tomorrow. Texas San Antonio at Houston at 6. Baylor's hosting Texas State at 6. Wyoming hosting Texas Tech at 6:30. Watch Texas Tech lose that game. West Virginia at Penn State, who's a top 10 team, at 6:30. Some people think West Virginia is going to pull off the upset there. And then late tomorrow night, Sam Houston against BYU at 9:15. And then KU will play another Friday night game next Friday, September 8th, when they host Illinois. And K-State in week two will be hosting Troy at 11 a.m. So that's a look ahead. In regards to the top 25 matchups, number 2 Michigan hosts East Carolina. Tennessee, number 12, hosts Virginia. They really shouldn't rank anybody until they played a game, but that's how it works. Oklahoma is 20th after going 6-7 a year ago. They will host Arkansas State. Iowa, number 25, hosts Utah State. Number 22, Ole Miss, hosts Mercer. Oregon, number 15, hosts Portland State. Rice, number 11, hosts Rice. Texas is number 11. Rice is who they host. Ohio State's number 3 at Indiana. It is interesting. The Big 10 starting out with Big 10 games. Washington hosting Boise State. Washington's ranked 10th. Notre Dame ranked 13th. They host Tennessee State. And Wisconsin's ranked 19th. They host Buffalo, number 1, Georgia. Tough one to start against Tennessee Martin. Have you looked at Georgia's schedule? It's got to be the easiest schedule ever for a defending champion, which they're a 2-time defending champion.
Yeah.
USC, number 6, hosting Nevada. And A&M is ranked 23rd and always overranked, will host New Mexico. So those are, and then Alabama's got Middle Tennessee. That's a toughie for the Tide. Alabama, number 4. And North Carolina, number 21, against South Carolina. And Tulane, number 24, against South Alabama. So there's a look at the top 25. MIAA, they played all their games on Thursday. Fort Hays State shut out Northeastern State 56-0. It was Emporia State crushing Lincoln 56-10. Northwest Missouri State edged Missouri Southern 31-24. Pittsburgh State took care of Washburn. Go Gorillas 34-7. And in a high-scoring affair, Central Missouri knocked off Missouri Western 45-38. Nebraska Kearney lost on a field goal to Central Oklahoma 24-21. And just because we have to, well, we don't have to, but we'll sneak it in. The Royals had yesterday off. They did not lose. Shouldn't an off day count as a win for the Royals? It really should.
It does in my mind.
KU counted a spring game as a win one time on their schedule. The Royals had yesterday off. They are currently on a 6-game losing streak. They're 41-94. They have never been 53 games under 500 in their livelihood in franchise history. But they're there now. And there is no better guy to stop a 6-game losing streak and to get their elusive 42nd win of the year than a guy that they pay $8 million for, and that is Jordan Lyles with a record of 3-15. ERA is 6.5. We'll take on the Red Sox. Red Sox fighting for their playoff lives, 7-10 tonight at Kauffman Stadium. And big thing that happened yesterday in baseball, Atlanta Braves' Ronald Acuna swatted his 30th home run, a grand slam last night for the Atlanta Braves. He became the first 30-60 player in history. He has 30 homers and over 60 steals. And if he could get red hot, he'd be the first 40-60 guy. Remember the whole, 30-30 guys when they came into vogue?
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden you got Canseco, the first to do 40-40, which has anybody done 40-40 since Canseco? I don't know.
I don't know. The stolen bases were down for so long because of the way baseball was played, but they're back up this year because they're bigger bases and it's played different.
Pickoff moves.
Yeah.
But Acuna could be a 40-40 guy, but it'd be different. It'd be a 40-60 guy. Or he could be a 40-70 guy.
Yeah.
40 homers, 70 stolen bases.
Yeah,
pretty impressive.
Yeah, he gets 70 stolen bases, too.
I'd give him the MVP in the National League, but Mookie Betts is on fire right now for the Dodgers. They're hot again, like they usually are late in the year. And Freddie Freeman for the Dodgers, a former Brave, is having a banner year as well. So trying to figure out the NL MVP is going to be tough.
Mm-hmm.
Two Dodgers votes might take away from each other. In the American League, the MVP, I think, is a no-brainer. Ohtani's still hitting. He's not pitching. He shut down for the rest of your pitching. But Ohtani is probably the MVP, even though he's on a team that's not going to make the playoffs. That's not his fault.
No, not at all.
All right. Want to go back over the schedule for tonight before we let everybody go?
Yeah, Football Express 540 presented by Cunningham Telephone and Cable on Katy Country 94. Following that, we'll have pregame 6:30 kickoff, 7 o'clock with St. John's Tipton at Rock Hills. And then on Z96.3, again, an hour later, pregame 7:25 and kickoff 8 o'clock, Beloit hosting Ellsworth. Also online video stream at ncksports.com with the Beloit Trojan Channel. And then we'll conclude it with the local high school football scoreboard show at 10:05, brought to you by State Farm Insurance in Beloit and Osborne. Week one, night one of the high school football season here tonight.
All right, you want to get a KU fans prediction real quick?
Okay.
I am sorry, you guys. You're making me puke with the purple talk. I'm thinking KU 8-4 with a healthy quarterback, which I could agree with that. It's a big if. I'm thinking K-State 7-5. This is a KU fan texting me. You lose the all-star Deuce, who looks like he was truly the real deal, and I think Howard probably played as good as he could last year. K-State does have their line back. That could be a problem. But I just want K-State to lose. Laugh my rear end off. K-State 7-5, KU 8-4. Come on now. You know who you are that sent that text to me.
Is this the same person that talks about how important an offensive line is?
Yes, it is. this
could be a problem with K-State having all their line back.
This guy's first name rhymes with a word that everybody hates, tax. And I need him to text me and tell me then what is his prediction already. I need it now. For November 18th when KU hosts K-State. Is that the difference between why KU is 8-4 and K-State 7-5? Because KU is going to beat K-State this year.
Yeah.
Is that true, Max? Oops. Is that true? Is KU going to finally beat K-State in football, Max? Let me know so I can go get a hold of the legal gambleized stuff that I have access to and put all my money. Oh, he says KU guaranteed. Well, hell yeah! I'm putting all my money on the Jayhawks to win November 18th when they'll probably be on their fourth-string quarterback because three guys are hurt. Oh, Max, I love your optimism. I will say this about Max. That's a guy that has lived through a lot of bad football. And he's even been optimistic when they've sucked. And it always cracks me up early and before the year begins. He told me one year that they were gonna go to a bowl, and they went, 1-11? Whatever it was, 2-10. But I love his optimism. And here's the great thing about sports. Before the season begins, everybody starts with the same record.
Yep.
Everybody starts with the same record. That's why I'm excited for the Royals until they lose their season opener. And then then it's time for football, and here it is.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or SunflowerStateRadio.com.